translation. Maya Dhanav said, "What has been ordained by the Supreme Lord for oneself, for others, or for both oneself and others, cannot be undone anywhere or by anyone, whether one be a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else," purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is one, Krishna, the Vishnu Tattva. Krishna expands Himself into Vishnu Tattva, personal expansions, Swamsh, who control everything. Maya Dhanav said, "However, I plan, you plan, or both of us plan. The Lord has planned what is to happen. No one's plan will be successful without His sanction. We may make our own various plans, but unless they are sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, they will never be successful. Hundreds and millions of plans are made by all kinds of living entities, but without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, they are futile." Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, and good morning to everybody. That wonderful kirtan woke me up from this life, at least. So today's beautiful day. It's the second day of the month of Marga Shirsh, a very sacred month. As we see that as ISKCON develops further and further and further, unlike other institutions that have been around for thousands of years, that have so much history, you find that certain months and festivals are being observed, such as, for example, Kartik. And Kartik is known to be a very beautiful month throughout ISKCON, which is celebrated as the best of all months. Marga Shirsh, this month which has just started, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Masanam Marga Shirshoham. So He specifically says that amongst months, the best month is Marga Shirsh, and therefore that month represents Him. And we are in the second day of that month. So as time goes on, no doubt, such imports of such words of the Gita will become more and more clear. Within this chapter, of the chapter 10 of the 7th canto, it's an extremely, very, very small episode between two personalities, Lord Shiva and Maya Dhanav, is being explained by Narada to Yudhishthir. Now, Narada and Yudhishthir are very key personalities in the Vedic literatures, and therefore when Vyasadev compiled, in fact I should say recompiled, the Srimad Bhagavatam, because initially, after He compiled the Vedas, of course, He had already attained perfection from the objective of His purpose, which was to divide the Vedic scriptures. But then He realized that as and while I'm giving the summum bonum to the entire human race and making it easy for them, rather than have an extremely massive large book, I'm now going to divide it all up so that people can very easily assimilate the Vedic scriptures. He then also foresaw that, in fact, in the previous times to when Vyasa divided the Vedas, Krishna would come regularly as either Himself or Rama or as Shaktivesh avatars. And in Kali Yuga, that doesn't really happen. In fact, the demigods explain that we don't really accept any worship in Kali Yuga, and neither do we come and appear to our devotees in Kali Yuga. They keep a distance. It's a bit like the demigods not wanting to come to planet Earth any longer because of the age of Kali. And therefore Vyasadev saw that at least there'll be one personality who will appear, who will be responsible for the entire revolution of Bhakti Yoga, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, in order to be instrumental in that entire philosophy and that entire renaissance that will take place after the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I need to make the pastimes and the primary objectives of life very easily available, very simply available, because as you study the various Vedas, it is not apparent that devotional service or Lord Sri Krishna reigns supreme and is the objective of one's life. Because the Vedas also deal with so many other types of topics, from how to comb your hair, how to shave your hair, what kind of clothes to wear, how to eat, recipes. It's an entire culture. And therefore you can always very easily be detracted and become a specialist in a particular subject and actually leave out the purpose of life, Krishna. And therefore Vyasadeva, he then chose one book which he had already written. And Prabhupada explains this in the first canto. And as you all know, the entire pastime between Vyasa and Narada took place. And then when Narada extracted the 18,000 verses from the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva then went back to the Shrimad Bhagavatam and re-edited it. And when he did so, because the Shrimad Bhagavatam is meant to be a commentary on two works which Vyasadeva himself penned, because the Vedas were always around, the two works were Vedanta Sutra, which was his view on how to see the Vedas. Because previous to him, and in fact contemporary to him, there were other rishis who explained, this is the meaning of the Vedas, darshan. This is how you see the Vedas. A bit like, you know, if you go to those shops with the 3D glasses, you put those on, you can see the picture very differently. So darshanas are meant to be like that. So contemporary to Vyasa, well, previous to Vyasa, we have Gautama Rishi, Patanjali, etc., giving their own darshans. And the contemporary to Vyasa, one of his very own friends, who later on became his disciple when they became defeated by him, was Rishi Jaimini, who wrote the Karmakanda, the Karma Mimam Sutra. So Vyasa said, all this is bogus. I'm now going to give the precise way in how you can extract Krishna and understand Krishna through his own literatures. And why? Because the Vishnu Puran says, Narayana Swayam Prabhu. That because Vyasa was the Supreme Lord himself. And therefore, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Krit, Vedavid, Eva Chaham, he's explaining how through Vyasa, he is establishing the Vedas, he's the knower of the Vedas, and he's the compiler of the Vedas. Apart from Vedanta Sutra, then he wrote the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata is a text which is not revealed every Kali Yuga, and in fact, not revealed by any other Vyasa. Because in the Vishnu Puran, Prabhupada explains that at least 28 Vyasas have come and gone. And every one of those Vyasas only performed Vyasta, divided the Vedas. But when God himself appears as Vyasadev, then he manifests the Mahabharata. And therefore the Mahabharata is an extremely unique text. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the conclusion of the Vedanta Sutra and is the commentary on the Mahabharata. And therefore, in the very same way that Vyasa chose Yudhishthir, Dharmraj, and such personalities as his own spiritual master, Narada, to reveal the truths of Lord Sri Krishna, he therefore took those personalities and characteristics of his own work, the Mahabharata, and infiltrated in Srimad Bhagavatam to expand the purpose of the Bhagavatam. And therefore Yudhishthir and Narada are very, very important personalities, and therefore within this chapter, Narada is now revealing an extremely esoteric pastime which took place many, many, many years previous between Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva. Let us recap very slightly in order to put into perspective the verse that we are reading today, or I should say the verses we are reading today. So, and no doubt the previous speakers here have explained, but the demigods, as usual, had a fight with the asuras. And Sri Krishna himself, by his mercy, ensured that the demigods reigned successful. However, in the very same way that within the celestials, we have priests, scriptures, practices, culture, in the very same way amongst the demoniac race of people, there are also these aspects of life. And there was one Parama Acharya, one great Acharya by the name of Maya Danav. Now he was named Maya Danav because Danav is a very specific type of living entity which is elaborated in the Padma Puran. In the Padma Purana, when Vyasa explains about the 8.4 million forms of life, he also touches upon Danavas. And Danavas are a mixture of the human intellect. The human intellect means one who is more engrossed in trying to lord over material nature. This is how it's explained. But then Danava refers to they have the powers of the celestials. So when you get, for example, there's a joke, when you get a Brahman who becomes very greedy, he becomes a Brahmarakshasa. Very difficult person to deal with. Sometimes either after death or within the very same body. Very difficult to deal with. So similarly, a Danava is a mixture of these two extreme ends of the world. The good and the evil. And in fact, when they came together to form the greatest teacher, this became Maya Danava. And specifically why he's called Maya is because he had mastered, absolutely mastered, the ability to completely transform and manipulate material nature. Now we speak of Siddhis. This man was Mr. Siddhi. He had power in totality. He was able to create universes. He was able to create living entities. And you know what? He mastered the very beautiful science which at least South Indians are struggling to try to project over the West. Ayurveda. He had mastered Ayurveda to a capacity that no doctor could ever, ever imagine. He was able to not only give Ayurvedic remedies for our diseases, but he was able to provide something which was infiltrated with mystic power. And therefore, like Shukracharya, he was able to bring back people from death. Such a powerful. And therefore Vyasa, well, Narada explains, Parama Acharya, who was a great mystic, great teacher. And therefore, the Rakshasas went to Maya Danav and took shelter of him. And Maya Danav said, fine, I am going to help you. It is not fair that the celestials have Brihaspati as their priest. It is not fair that the celestials are always favored by Lord Vishnu. Always favored. This is really unfair. And in fact, Shukracharya had the very same mentality. Of course, they were philosophers of equality. You see? And sometimes philosophers of equality can actually lose the beautiful power of discrimination. Now, discrimination is a principle that has to be done very, very carefully. And therefore, all the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discriminates very clearly between what is right and what is wrong. And when people may criticize that the Bhagavad Gita, ultimately it's sanctioning war. Prabhupada in the previous charges explained that such discrimination and such sanctioning of activities can only be done by Lord Sri Krishna. And therefore the great war in Kurukshetra was only done purely because Krishna had sanctioned it. And in fact, to wage a war in Kurukshetra, which is a place of pilgrimage, the place where Lord Brahma himself created the entire three worlds. Kurukshetra, the very place where the universe expanded from, where Lord Brahma sat in contemplation and received initiation, the center of the universe, Kurukshetra, very great place of pilgrimage. And only Krishna, or previous to him, Parashuram, who is in fact the Shakti Veshavatara Sri Krishna, and previous to him, specific celestials were able to wage war at Kurukshetra. It was like the best of all places to wage war when it is a question of righteousness. Otherwise, war will be waged in other places around India. And sometimes outside of India. Very, very rarely. And therefore, every aspect of the Mahabharata war was only allowed to be done because Krishna had sanctioned it. And someone like him can discriminate correctly. So equality is a specific situation that is actually very difficult to understand. And especially the balance between where we need to now say, okay, enough is enough. Now we need to look at varnashram. Now we need to look at varna, one's own qualities, and one where actually sits superior. So a sannyasi, as we have present here today, is no doubt out of due to his commitment and dedication to the path of renunciation. You see, it's the opposite to material world. The material world, no matter how rich and how beautiful and how opulent you are, to that degree you are considered to be the supreme. And the Vedic culture, the less you have, and the more committed and dedicated you are to renunciation, to that extent, you're considered to be a representation of Sri Krishna in this world as a Swami, as the Lord of all people. And therefore, in the Mahanarayana Upanishad, Nagaravanana Pratyadanena Tyage Naike Paramritamanshuhu, that is not by birth, it is not by activities, it is not by progeny, it is not by even one's own abilities to please other people. It is only by sannyas. This is what the Mahanarayana Upanishad explains, that one can actually attain the residence of Sri Krishna. Yet Pundarikam, and be associated with that supreme personality of Godhead with beautiful lotus eyes. Because it's trying to emphasize renunciation, and therefore this prayer to sannyasi, which I've just chanted in the presence of Maharaj. Thank you. So Maya Dhanav, he said, fine, I believe in equality. The demigods have the three worlds wherein they are living so peacefully, and amongst those horrid, wretched humans. By their will of sacrifices, the demigods get power. Because of them, the demigods come regularly. And for some reason or other, Lord Vishnu always descends in planet Earth, generally. So therefore, let me now create equivalent to the three worlds. And in fact, I'm going to create three worlds in such a way that it'll be invisible. You know, he went, you know, we speak of Lord Brahma. He went just one step above Lord Brahma, you know, really trying to show off his powers. I'll do the same as Lord Brahma. But in fact, it's going to be invisible. Not only invisible, in those planets, I'm going to try to replicate the qualities of the spiritual world. For example, trees, apple trees are going to give mangoes, if you want it to. You know, rather than just wake up in the morning and decide what clothes you're going to wear, with a flick of the finger, you can change your dress. Who needs to iron your dhoti? Jai Shri Radha Krishna Bhagwan ki jai, Sri Lakshmana Man ki jai, Shri Shri Gonithai ki jai. So Maya Dhanava, he infiltrated his creation with such very, very exquisite, opulent paraphernalia that even Lord Brahma was thinking, ah, very good, very good. This is the beautiful type of creation that he's done. The problem is, he done it out of prestige and out of ego. And therefore in the Gita, Krishna reminds us that any activity, even charity, or even service done in this way is not really pleasing. And therefore it's not in the mode of goodness, it's in the mode of passion in the least. And having done so, these demons who were now inhabiting the three planetary systems called the Tripura, in the very same way we have three loka, the three pura, then had the audacity to wage war in retaliation to the demigods. And at this time, they were winning. And they were winning because they were backed by their acharya, Maya Dhanava. And by his blessings, they had come to a point where the entire celestial race was doomed to be destroyed. Now, if that destroys, then in fact, from material nature, to the weather, to vegetation, to very, very simple aspects of this universal creation, will all become ruined. And therefore, they seeked shelter of Mahadev, Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva is quite interesting because Lord Shiva is also associated with demons and hobgoblins, etc., etc. An account of his service in one of his forms out of his 11. And by the celestials, the demigods approaching Lord Shiva, it's quite a lesson because they're approaching somebody who is compatible enough to deal with the enemy. Because Lord Shiva knows the science of Maya. He knows Dhanavas. He knows Rakshasas. He knows all of the illusory energy that can possibly be used by them. And therefore, Lord Shiva was approached, and not any other demigod, for this specific reason. And Lord Shiva said, of course, fine, I will help you. Because he could see. And in fact, Lord Shiva is very, very kind. The last time he helped out was when the entire universe was being churned. And even a few drops that had managed to escape from his palms became scorpions, deadly snakes, and such types of insects. And he drank the haladhara, the poison, which would have destroyed the entire universe. So again, Lord Shiva is being summoned to help out. You know, demigods are quite, you know, they know what they want. And they know exactly who to call upon. And this time, Lord Shiva, with his entire might, placing upon celestial after celestial arrows. These arrows that are documented by two personalities, Vashishtha and Vishwamitra, in two books called the Dhanurved. Therefore, we have the Vashishtha Dhanurved and the Vishwamitra Dhanurved. And in both of these two texts, very small books in sutra forms, in Chanda forms, i.e. Anushtup, Trishtup, 32, 38, 42 syllable long, they describe the entire science of celestial archery, of how to invoke different astras, Narayana, Brahmastra, Shirsha Astra, Pashupata Astra, so many different types of Agniya, Vayava, even Narsimha Astra. And Lord Shiva, one by one, on his bow, placed such fiery, very, very disastrous arrows. And while doing so, he, one at a time, started to massacre the entire race of the Danavas and the Rakshasas. But with someone like Maya Danava around, who cares? What did he do? He created a well of a very specific Ayurvedic medicine. Now here we're not speaking of Shitopaladi Churna. We're not speaking of Ashwagandha. We're not speaking of Sudarshan or Narayana Tela. We're speaking of a well of nectar. And an entire well was curated of nectar so that all he did was he picked up each of these Danavas and Rakshasas like one picks using a pin different pieces of dust, and he just dipped them one at a time. He dipped them into this well, and as each Rakshasa and Danava were dipped, they came out invincible, and like the very verse explains, they became invincible enough to withstand Vajra or thunderbolts. Now the word Vajra is very, you see in the Bhagavatam you find that every word is very, very specific because it carries so much weight. There is a misunderstanding which was promoted by a person, a very beautiful person who is glorified throughout India and throughout the West, and I am ashamed to say even throughout some devotional groups. And this person, his objective was write Sanskrit, the Vedas. This is clearly the origin of the world. It's clearly supreme. It's clearly amazing. Why not? I now show how, in fact, these texts and these sciences have some issues, have some problems. And one of the first things he said was Sanskrit, a language which is said to be perfect, actually is a very confusing language. One word has so many meanings. Ah! Takes so many years to learn. It's so difficult. Forget about the meaning of the word Sanskrit, which means perfect. It's so, so horrible to learn. Oh, forget it. In fact, English, another language, is very, very simple. It's not even phonetical. You just study it how you write it, not how you read it. So therefore, psychology has a P. It's okay. You know, it's how you write it. Forget about the whole reading aspect, because the Vedas are based upon hearing. Every aspect to discredit the Vedas and Sanskrit, he was victorious in. Let's call him Rishi Max Muller, our old German friend, who is now worshipped in so many Sanskrit institutions. And people actually believe this. They actually believe that Sanskrit is such a complicated language. In fact, it's such a simple language that one can learn it. Actually, in fact, the entire Vedic culture is actually for babies. There's a nice verse in the scriptures that the entire Vedic culture, all the four Vedas in Sanskrit, is actually something for babies. Because when you're adult, so much, I'm sorry to say, so much nonsense is in the mind that it's very difficult to assimilate the simple. And therefore, if you go on the internet, you find that kids, you know, 3, 4, 5 year olds can speak Sanskrit fluently, you know, compared to elder people. Because Sanskrit is actually a language for the children. And therefore, the Rig, Yajur, Atharva, Sama, all of these Vedas that Krishna says he is, was only really taught when you were 7. Because your brain was very simple. And by the time you're about 15, 16, you've memorized the Vedas. And Sanskrit is a language which you speak, not just understand or try to study. It's a language for babies. The Vedas is a study for babies. Because at that age, the very simple age, and in fact scientists also say that it is that age that you can actually understand the greater secrets and the more advanced subjects. And therefore Upanayana, or the study of the Vedas, were given not to people who were elder. In fact, the Dharma Shastra goes to the extent of saying that, you know what, once you pass 16, then you know what, you've actually had it. You're asavitrika. You're not qualified for initiation any longer. This is what Manu explains. Because by then you would have become so conditioned that Sanskrit and the language of Sri Krishna and his sciences is just going to become also what confusing. And even if you understand it, you're probably going to make a mess of it. No, I'm not referring here to devotees. Obviously, in devotional service, the Panchalaptika Vidhi and our whole science of devotional service, it's very, very different, because then we, by our mercy of Sri Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, attain the qualities of the celestials, and by our austerities to wake up to Mangal Arati and perform our devotional rites, etc. It's a whole different ballgame. But here, I'm just explaining about general truths. And therefore, getting back to the point, with Lord Shiva over here, the verse Vajra and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when one can understand a little bit about the specific use of words, you find the philosophy behind it. And therefore the word Vajra is being used because the Lord of the Celestials is Indra. And Indra is actually sometimes called Vajra. And therefore by emphasizing that the Rakshasas, the Danavas, were made invincible enough to withstand Indra. In other words, they were more powerful than the Lord of the heavenly planets. So in fact, they were invincible. To be more powerful than the king of the world, or the king of the three worlds, the celestial worlds, you know, you really are the strongest. And therefore, Vyasa is using this word. Now, having dipped each of these personalities into the well of nectar, he humiliated Lord Shiva. Because now, after using Vishishta and Vishwamitra's Dhanurvedas, after having exerted all of his energy to destroy the entire three worlds, in fact, he burnt the three worlds, the invisible three worlds, there was no point. Because Maya Danava had undone everything. He had picked up each of these people, each of the elements, and not only rejuvenated them, given them life again, but made them invincible enough to withstand Indra. Shiva was humiliated. He was shown to be absolutely nothing. And at that point, when such a great devotee of Sri Krishna is at least mentally feeling such sadness with what now Maya Danava has done, and we can also understand the power of Maya Danava. Krishna, without even having to be asked, he fulfilled the desire of his devotee, Lord Shiva, by personally seeing how much Lord Shiva was aggrieved. The verse explains, Lord Sri Krishna, Vishnu, considered how to stop this nuisance. Prabhupada used the word nuisance, created by Maya Danava. Because actually this whole thing was just a waste of time. It's not really going to do anything beneficial to the world. It's going against the material nature. It's going against the plan of God. And therefore, the word nuisance is being used over here. And what did Lord Vishnu do? He took the form of dharma. He became a cow. And the father of Lord Shiva, Brahma, became a calf. And it's so important because, you see, sometimes the question is, why does Vishnu and the gods always appear as specific animals if they have to? Because each of those animals represent and are symbolic of something really, really great. And a cow, as we all know, is not only the representation of goodness and the Vedas, and the very milk from which it gives is the entire source of strength in the lives of devotees and our ability to assimilate Krishna's message. But the cow also represents the... We find in the Rig Veda, the word cow is being used to describe Vaikuntha. And in fact, Goloka Vrindavan. Davam vastunya ushmasi gamadyai yatra gavo buri shringa ayasaha atraha tadurgayasa vishnaha param paramavati abhuhi. That in the Rig Veda, in describing Goloka, it uses the symbol of a cow to explain on how the entire place is nothing other than transcendental energy. And this is what is used, in fact, in the Rig Veda to describe Golok. So the cow is not just because Krishna felt like becoming a cow. It's because it's very, very specific in activity. And having become a cow and Lord Brahma a calf, they came forward and they drank and they emptied that well. Now Maya Danav was thinking, now look, now not only Maya Danav, but the verse explains that even the other Rakshas of the Danavas were seeing this. They were seeing this well, which is being used to rejuvenate the entire Rakshas and Danav race, is now being emptied by this cow and by a calf, which was clearly not one of his creations. And he was thinking, what is going on? The Maya Danava could have very simply destroyed the calf and the cow, very simply. But being an acharya, and someone who knows the truth but decides not to practice it, as His Holiness Tamakrishna Maharaj in one of his most beautiful film lectures explained, that it's very difficult to wake a person who is pretending to sleep. Very difficult to wake a person who is pretending to sleep. So Maya Danav was like that. But because of him being intelligent and because of him understanding Vedic scripture, and in fact, Vimana Shastra, by which he used to float the planets, and the Maya Shastra and Tantra Shastra, which he used to completely manipulate material energy, he recognized the calf and the cow as being Devena Icha, the will of providence. Devena Icha. And therefore, he decided not to intervene. See how clever he is. While at the same time, see, this is actually a demon. Not the demons that we see nowadays in the rolling around in the streets of London and rolling around, you know. There is a demon who knows when to call the shots. You know? He knows, right, this is my time to attack. And now when I see the will of God, the will of providence now coming to destroy or stop something or ruin, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, my plan, I'm going to give up. I'm going to let what happens happen. And therefore you find even the lives of devotees, whether it be sannyasis or great acharyas, no matter how powerful and how charismatic and how elevated they were, you find at certain junctures of their life, they let the will of providence carry them forth, whether it was towards their time of death, wherein in fact we will call the entrance to the spiritual world, or whether it was in their various dealings, wherein they were just not able to carry any longer. You know, you don't chew the chewed. There's a point where you actually stop. And that point is when that great personality recognizes the hand of God. And that, and the Mahabharata is full of them. The Mahabharata is full of them. Despite Krishna being present, time after time after time, his most dearest devotees, the Pandavas, you know, there was really no one more dear than the Pandavas. So, you know, like the Gita explains, Arjun describes, we would sleep on the same bed. We would eat from the same trays. And sometimes Krishna will be completely humiliated. Now, this is not as a child, as a grown-up individual. I mean, you know, we're looking at 80, 90-year-old, because as we know, he was 125 when he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. He was a mature person. But he was sometimes dealt with in a very, very strange way by his own devotees. Pandavas were so close to him and they were related to him. Despite that, the Pandavas went through so many problems. And so many times they said, Yudhishthir would say to Bhim and Arjun, who would always say, whoever does anything bad to me, let's just crush their head. Let's just break them to pieces. There were so many times in the Mahabharata where Yudhishthir would say, let me look, forget about righteousness. Forget about vows. Forget about the word. You know, the word of Yudhishthir was so important. You know, who cares if we played a game of Ludo and we lost our kingdom? Who cares? Let me just go and destroy Dhritarashtra, even Bhishma. Forget about Dushasana and Dronacharya. Right now I can destroy the entire Hastinapur. I don't care if I was put on stake and I was lost by Yudhishthir. Who cares? You know, I could do what I want. But Yudhishthir would always say, no, this is the will of providence. This is the will of Krishna. Because Yudhishthir knew that as a result of all of these problems, something great is going to happen. And as we all know, Bhagavad Gita and the entire establishing of Dharma Samsthapanarthaya. So in this way, when Maya Dhanava saw the will of providence in front of him, he gave up and let Sri Krishna and his plan manifest. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.